Hello, this is Dr. Venu Jilipalli, and today we'll be mapping therapeutic love on the 15-minute matrix.
Welcome to the 15-minute matrix. I'm Andrea Nakayama, functional medicine nutritionist and your host. This is the podcast that brings you bite-sized insights and lessons on how to use the most important tool in functional medicine and functional nutrition. Today on the 15-Minute Matrix, I'll be speaking with my very dear friend, Dr. Venu Jilipalli. Dr. Jilipalli entered Stanford University as a National Merit Scholar and graduated in less than 3 years with a BS with distinction in biological sciences. He completed internal medicine residency and gastroenterology fellowship at Baylor College of Medicine. Venu is a clinician at heart and also enjoys teaching gastroenterology trainees and medical students as a clinical instructor at Baylor College of Medicine. He is also a member of the Texas Medical Association and Harris County Medical Society. Venu enjoys being with his family, reading everything from finance to philosophy, writing and renewing the promise of medicine, and watching his beloved New Orleans Saints. And I'd like to dedicate today's episode to my late husband, Isamu Nakayama. Not only is the topic apropos, but this past week marks the 16th anniversary of his passing. Before discussing therapeutic love, I hope you'll take a moment to honor Isamu by uttering his name out loud. I wouldn't be here today doing the work I do now without the many blessings that he left me. Welcome, Venu. Thank you so much for taking the time to hang out with me here and discuss one of our favorite topics.
It's always a delight to hang out with you, Andrea.
I'm so glad we're talking about this particular topic, therapeutic love, because it's something that along the way you and I really explored in conversation with one another. And I'm wondering if you could start us out by defining what you mean by therapeutic love as a gastroenterologist.
Sure. Well, first, let me preface this by saying that I am not the foremost authority on therapeutic love. I don't profess to be that. all I can do is just reflect my own experience in my profession as gastroenterologist, and also just being on the other side with family members who had major, major illnesses turn up totally out of the blue. My mother 2 years ago ruptured a brain aneurysm and is surviving and slowly recovering. My dad had an abdominal tumor developed last year, which he had major surgery for and then had a complication from. So, you know, and going through all this on the other side and also being in the profession on the inside of healthcare and knowing how that whole game works, you know, for me, therapeutic love, especially in the context of the healer-client or healer-patient relationship, is really, it's at the heart of it all. Yeah. And I can speak from it, at least at first, in the negative. It's like when you don't have that, when you're a family member of somebody who is in the hospital and having a lot of stuff thrown at us, which, you know, tends to happen in the acute setting, and you don't have that foundational love connection between you and your team, I mean, it's just devastating. It's a void that you palpably experience. And so I had already been exploring that, and I know we've had conversations about it in terms of how important it is in that relationship. And we just felt it. I mean, we felt it very tangibly when all this happened to us.
Yeah, I thank you, Venu, for sharing some of your personal experience. And I think what really resonates for us all as practitioners is that we're likely here in the profession we're in because we've had some experience. And as you know, and people listening may know or may not know, it's really what catapulted me into this profession myself, because I watched my husband, Isamu, treated like his diagnosis. He was not treated like the man he was. He was treated like a walking dead man because of his diagnosis. And that is, as you're speaking to, the antithesis of therapeutic love, when we treat people like their diagnosis, either in our emotional treatment of them or in our therapeutic or clinical treatment of them. And what it also makes me think of when you articulate it as you did is how love works in an epigenetic way to either turn on or turn off genetic expression that helps or hinders our health and recoveries. So therapeutic love works as a trigger and a mediator. Would you agree with that?
I would absolutely agree with that. And for me, it's just the crux of the entire profession and calling that we undertake as healers. I mean, in our world, it's the patient-doctor relationship, but of course, it's also the patient-healer relationship. I mean, on the inside of that relationship is trust, and on the inside of trust is nothing but love.
Yeah.
And in this case, you know, love, in terms of defining it a little bit more, you know, it's love that's beyond romanticism. And you know, when we use the word, especially in crusty medicine, you know, people get sometimes a little squeamish about it.
Right.
You know, what is this love, you know, touchy-feely, new agey stuff you're talking about in this, you know, objectivist world of medicine with CT scans and procedures and all the stuff that goes on. And there's nothing to deny any of that. I mean, the romantic love, the new agey, touchy-feely stuff is great, but this is like a world beyond that. It's really the pulsating beat of what you experience when you and the person that you are in a dyad with are engaging with each other as equals who have unique talents and skills and fears and anxieties and strengths all coming onto the table together. And it goes beyond words. I mean, it's something where you make an engaged, empathic connection with someone, and you could feel it, and you can feel it, and it drives decision making. It drives the tone of your conversation. It drives your body language when you sit down with somebody, and it goes beyond the scientific materialism that much of medicine still holds on to. But it doesn't reject it either. It looks to integrate everything together so that it becomes basically, to me, one medicine.
Yeah.
It's not alternative medicine. It's not conventional medicine. There is no antagonism. It's all just what is one medicine that will allow healing? And the currency of that, the flow, the energy of that is nothing but love to me.
It's really curious because I'm scribbling notes as you're talking, and I think it's a conversation that maybe is one of the most important conversations we have as clinicians. We think the important conversations are the ones that are laden with information and more clinical evidence, and yet what you're talking about is this person-to-person connection that's been so overlooked in our current healthcare model. And if we look at the matrix, it really does touch a number of areas. So we certainly have the mind, spirit, emotions, community node. We have the relationships and networks, but then we start to hit into stress and resilience and what that looks like for a patient, the patient partner. That starts to touch on hormones and neurohormones, which is going to influence the GI and the immune function. We really start to see how a practitioner showing up with love and care impacts the health and the outcomes of our patients in a completely hidden way that's just not talked about enough.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you know, when you look at the functional nutritional matrix and you go all the way around, I mean, it really, to me, it's that It's that orange dot that's right in the center.
Right.
It's actually at the hub of the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it informs the antecedents. It influences it. It influences the triggering events. It influences the mediators. Of course, it influences mind, spirit, emotions, and community, stress, immune, and inflammatory balance. It's to me, it's like the golden thread that actually weaves its way through all of it. And you know, and you can look at it in any number of different ways. It's love for one another in that therapeutic relationship that you have with your client or patient. It's also love for yourself, mm-hmm. Whether it's on the patient side or on the healer side, and all of those things, you know, whether we're conscious of it or not, are really informing that relationship that we have. And so you often, Andrea, talk about how for practitioners, it's not simply enough to just look at all the labs, find out all the symptoms,
right.
Correlate all the symptoms with diagnoses. Like that's part of it, to be sure. And our patients, our clients are looking to us to provide us guidance with that. But they're also looking to us for more than that. And that more for me is really about, it's that golden weave. It's like, how can I help as a healer? How can I be that guide? How can I be that journey man or woman who helps the person like weave a meta narrative out of all this to actually almost create a metaphor out of what's going on, to create a story, a unique story that allows the person to begin to kind of sing their own song, to weave something through all of the trials, all of the tribulations. And it's very dynamic. There's no
right.
It's very unique. There's not one way to write the story because it's a story that's quite unique to that person.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it is the hero's journey, and we as the practitioners are the guide, not the God. And we've really gone into a culture where especially the doctor is seen as the God. You are going to tell me what to do. You're going to tell me how to do it, and you're going to have the answers. So I want to kind of double click on that and see how you found your way out of that. But I also am wanting to remark on your comment about love for self, love for ourselves as patients, and in that situation as caretakers for patients, like you mentioned with your parents, and also love for ourselves as practitioners, meaning it's not about knowing all the answers because we can't, because we don't know the person. And so how do we love ourselves through that process? But my question for you is how you found your way prior to these experiences with your parents to that quest to find love in the therapeutic relationship.
Well, I mean, I think it starts with a level of curiosity. And with curiosity comes a search for meaning, ultimately. So, I mean, that's how the path, I think, begins for a lot of us. I mean, I think in listening to your other guests, I think that's how the path began for many of them.
Right.
And I think, you know, I have different visuals that sometimes I try to employ when I sit down with somebody. And one of them is just, you know, a wheel. And, you know, oftentimes you see and you can feel somebody getting stuck. Their wheel gets stuck at a certain a fixed position. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, for what love does, love for oneself in particular, is to allow you to recognize that the wheel is not turning. And let's make this concrete. For example, like a lot of people will come, both in your world and mine, with a lot of nutritional experiments.
Right.
And you can see it in their eyes, like they feel so fixed. They feel so contracted in what they've kind of resigned themselves to do with regard to food that they're stuck and they feel trapped. And so they no longer have a loving relationship to the way that they're eating. You can sense that they're actually kind of in survival mode.
Right.
And so sometimes what love means in that context is simply to attempt to open up a doorway that says, you know, just like feel into that fear and that contraction and just open yourself up to turning that wheel, to allowing that wheel to flow, to move again. I mean, you know, this is not new stuff, right? I mean, in worlds of Chinese medicine and Ayurveda, you've got prana, you've got qi, and there's all kinds of techniques to unblock stagnant, congested flows. And so, you know, love is in part letting those energies move.
Right. Right. So love is nourishment, is what you're basically saying. Like, it's almost like we are creating or helping to create or inspire receptivity again. So what do we do? How do we do this as practitioners? How do we embrace this concept? Is it awareness of where we're pushing really hard for fixing or changing? I'm just sort of thinking as we're talking, Venu, that, you know, it's interesting that many of the topics that successful practitioners want to discuss on the podcast have to do with mindset and longevity and resilience and stress and hormones that impact our ultimate health. And yet, as practitioners seeking success, what we end up spending our time with is not meditation and forest bathing and, you know, reading insightful or inspiring texts. We spend time reading studies and searching Google and getting more books on clinical information. So how do we do this work to get to the place where we're actually making connection at a personal level, as opposed to always looking for the clinical pearl?
That's really, you know, one of these foundational questions. And I'll certainly confess, I mean, it's a work in progress for
right.
me.
Yes.
It's a challenge, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, for me, it involves holding paradoxes that I actually, like, as a caregiver, I don't have all the answers. It's not even possible for me to have all the answers. And so how can I engage with somebody to admit that, and then to kind of become a dyad and just find our way together through educated, informed decision making? And this is where, you know, reading up is important.
I mean,
knowing your subject matter is important. But then beyond that, because there is the paradox that's always inherent in healing, I mean, there is no there's almost no right answer in most things in medicine. I mean, I would venture to say there are few things in medicine that are really, really cut and dry.
Right.
And so in light of that, now it becomes just a playful engagement. Okay, you know, I don't have all the answers. You don't have all the answers. There's a certain level of authority that I do have that I'll bring into the equation. And then there's a certain level of authority that you will have that you'll bring into the equation.
Right.
And let's see what emerges. And at all times, we want to be recognizing that there's paradox in this. Like, there's moments where you don't know actually what the right decision is.
Yeah.
And on some level, which is tough, we have to be surrendering to that and be okay with that and let things emerge as they will. And, you know, it's interesting. I've been reading talk about, like, you know, our own practices and readings. So I read studies and stuff, but I actually get the most out of things that aren't those things.
Right.
So
totally.
I've been reading a book that's actually fairly, it's not new. It's like 25 years old. It's a book that was recommended to me by a new friend. It's called The Healing Path. And it's written by Michael Ian Barash. Hopefully I'm saying his name right, Barasch. And it's a wonderful book because it really is outlining not specifics, not protocols, but really, like, what does the healing path look like?
Yes.
How have people traversed it? And, you know, he talks about quite a few miracles in that book, but I think at the core is uniqueness, is the engagement of paradox, and the unleashing of love on that therapeutic relationship. That's what I read when I read that book.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. And, you know, one thing it makes me think about, and you and I have talked about this in the past, and it relates to what you're speaking about with surrendering to the process as clinicians, and that being part of the love relationship, the therapeutic love, is that we don't give up. And my joke about that has always been like, I'm a Jewish mother in healthcare, you know, I'm not going to give up on you. And right. I think that has to do with how we engage in that relationship in a way that's not about getting it right or wrong. It's about mm-hmm. being a guide. And sometimes being a guide means I'm handing you off to another practitioner who I think can mm-hmm. help you with this next stage. It means I don't know who's going to answer this for you, but let's keep digging. It means really staying with it and sitting mm-hmm. with the discomfort of not knowing the answer, not having the quick fix, and it not resolving very quickly, especially when we're working with chronic and unresolved health conditions, which are on the rise. So I'm wondering if there are any final notes, Venu, that you have that come to mind when you're thinking about therapeutic love that you would like to share with other practitioners.
Well, as I listen to these stories and I see it with my own eyes, I continue to be amazed at the absolute miraculousness of it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there are things that we would in modern terms call miracles that actually occur when you bring this into the practice. And you know, you mentioned the word epigenetics. I mean, the power of therapeutic love to influence at the epigenetic level things that one might seem to be so solid, it always makes my jaw drop. And I think that that's the hope that I think those with chronic illnesses can actually engage in. And I'm not here to say what's going to happen. I'm not here to predict what can occur. I think that what we can offer up here in a final word is walk the path. Walk the path and be engaging in that power. To me, it's the most powerful thing in the universe, this power of love.
I couldn't agree more. Thank you so much, Venu, for joining me today.
It's always a pleasure, Andrea. I love you.
I love you. The 15-Minute Matrix is brought to you by me, Andrea Nakayama, and the Functional Nutrition Alliance. The 15-Minute Matrix team includes one of those blessings I mentioned earlier, my son, Gilbert Nakayama, on sound production, Renee Hunt, Natalie Merrill, and Christine Shook. You can visit us and hear more episodes at 15minutematrix.com. And if you'd like to be notified each time there is a new podcast episode, please head over to 15minutematrix.com/notify. We'll be sure to drop into your inbox with a super short reminder that a new episode is ready and waiting for you. Plus, don't hesitate to email us. You can do so at ask@15minutematrix.com. That's ask@15minutematrix.com. Let us know how you're enjoying the podcast, who you'd like to hear on the podcast, what topics you'd like to see mapped, and I will be sure to take that into consideration. Thanks for listening.